Welcome to the GTC podcast.
Hi guys, welcome back to another episode of the GTC podcast. First of all, quick apologies. It's been a while since we've fired one out, but we've got a few more lined up, and hopefully we'll be able to fill the void in a little bit and stack them up a little bit more regularly. Another quick apologies, we've got some new equipment that we're testing out, and the Wi-Fi and internet on this one wasn't the best, so the sound quality may dip in, may dip out. I've done my best to clear it up the best I can, but it's not really as good as we would have liked it, but promise you, if you stick with it, get through the couple of seconds here and there that's a bit not perfect, it does smooth out, and it's definitely an episode that's worth listening.
I think we're almost there, mate.
Jay's recording the call.
There we go. We are in. Well, welcome to, I was going to say the old name then, but no, welcome to the GTC podcast. Everyone, this is Matt. He is from Unique Expeditions. I'm not going to try and intro it too much. Apologies if you can hear it. A storm has rolled in to where I'm based at the moment, so you might hear the wind blowing by. But he's an ex-British Army and now the Chief Instructor and Director of Unique Expeditions. So, Matt, welcome, mate.
Thank you so much, buddy. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, it's good to finally connect. We've been chatting a little bit on the gram for the past sort of couple of weeks, couple of months, so it's good to finally put a face to the name.
Couldn't agree more, mate. We've got some friends in common, so it's been good to catch up. Sporting a good few sets of silkies now and some t-shirts, so living the dream, mate.
Legend. Cheers to the sport, buddy. So let's give us a quick rundown then. What is Unique Expeditions? You know, what do they do? What do they provide? And then we can delve into where it's come from, but just give us a brief sort of outlook as to what it is.
Absolutely. So Unique Expeditions was set up in 2018 by myself and Josh, who goes by the Expert Medic on Instagram. I'd previously been running expeditions worldwide. Me and Josh met up. Actually, he became a student within this medical training course about 10 years ago, 8-10 years ago. And we really kind of hit it off. He had a really nice ethos. I moved out to Norway after a bit of a midlife crisis, and decided to kind of give it all a run and start again. So we decided to give it a really good go. So Unique Expeditions ethos is obviously we take people out on expedition. That was where we came from. But the main kind of focus of the business is medical training for student doctors and paramedics, to qualify them and give them the tools really to be a good expedition medic. We'd found over many years of running trips that we had lots of like talking med kits. You know, they weren't actual functioning human beings. They were just doctors who could carry a med kit and talk, but they were completely useless in an expedition setting. And obviously that's not something we don't want. And it meant that the doctors in the industry really were very few. There was very few doctors you could go and pick and take them out and do stuff, because obviously they needed to have a level of competence in the outdoors. So that's where it started. We started by taking people out, teaching them the basics of obviously expedition medicine, because it's not something they cover whilst they're in university. You know, it's all about in-hospital care, and we wanted to focus on pre-hospital care and pre-hospital care in austere and remote environments. So the main goal obviously is giving them those skill sets, how to deal with a casualty, acting, using radios, all the things they never get to do. We found the paramedics much better at that because it's their day job. But equally, take them out of the ambulance, take them out of the town and drop them in the middle of the jungle in Brunei. It's a very different kind of game. So that was the main gig, really. And we've been nailing it. COVID nearly killed us all, but we're still here. And we've done a cracking year this year. We had a cracking year last year. And we're smashing 2023. We're booking up and getting ready for Norway in 7-8 weeks. So we've got 12 students coming up here. So yeah, it's going well. It's been a long kind of push. It's one of those things where we kind of lost lost the drive a little bit in the middle of COVID, and we managed to kind of pull our finger out of our arse and decide that, you know, if we're going to do this, we have to do it properly. So we started banging out webinars. We started getting incredible people on, talk about, you know, everything from psychology whilst being on expedition to the pathways different doctors have taken to get to where they are. And so, yeah, it's been really positive. It's been really, really positive.
Yeah, it's one of those interesting things that a lot of people don't realise. You know, it's sort of, it's the classic proverb, if you like, but on steroids. You know, that, you know, when in the old films and even some films now, someone gets injured, they fall over, or they're on a plane. Does anyone know a doctor? You know? No. And it's like, right now, they don't need a doctor. What they need right now is first aid. Then when they get to hospital, that's when they need a doctor. Because most doctors, not all are given that, but most doctors, like trauma doctors, a little bit different, but most doctors, incredible at aftercare and treating long-term diseases, they can't, you know, pack a wound, or they can't pull someone off a mountain, you know. And it's like, it's an interesting sort of take that I never really considered, because that is it, isn't it? You need that kind of in-depth knowledge, especially if you are the doc, the medical person in a hostile environment. You need to have that in-depth knowledge to be able to say, actually, this isn't something we can deal with on the mountain, in the jungle, anything like that. We need to send you back because this could be XYZ, and I need this to treat you. We don't have it. Or be able to say, you know, yeah, I can wrap that up, give you this, you're good to go, you can crack on for the rest of the day. I think a lot of people don't realise that there is a massive difference between sort of trauma care, if you like, and first aid, especially in hostile environments, compared to doctoring and keeping people alive long term.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, a doctor, I mean, it's something that, to be honest, that I knew very little about. I knew very little about the education process of a doctor, how that came about. And you know, ultimately, when you come out of the game and you've got that doctor in front of your name, what actually that means. And what I've learned in the last 5 or 6 years is that, you know, they specialise in things. You know, there's a specialty towards the end. And if that specialty is, you know, paediatrics or gynecology or just general practitioner in a GP surgery, you know, obviously all of their skill set goes directly into that role, because that's where they have to be 100%. You know, so taking a doctor outside of that comfortable, warm GP's office is scary enough. Many of them do ambulance shifts, and, you know, they keep their eye in with kind of pre-hospital care, but not all, and especially the older they get, they end up finding themselves a job, they'll be a partner in a practice or whatever, and they've got a pretty stable life. But you put that person in a remote, austere environment, something happens, absolutely they've got the skills to save the life. If they were in a sterile environment with all the equipment around and they're fronting around, what we found was by starting the training early, we also unlocked the key feature of expedition medicine, which is sometimes you can't get out. You know, sometimes there is no exfil, and sometimes you have to keep somebody alive for 3-4 days before you can get them out. Or maybe you've got to keep them alive for 3-4 days whilst you are getting them out, or you're moving on foot. And those elements really aren't touched. They're not touched in medicine. They're not taught in universities. You know, it really did kind of, the feedback we get from the customers now is fantastic, because we're giving them real skills, and we're not just teaching medicine. We're teaching fire lighting, water purification, shelter building, rope work, ice axe use, crampon use, you know, general jungle tool use, finding food in the jungle, creating shelter from the jungle, digging snow holes in the Arctic, learning what it feels like to fall through the ice. You know, that was a big one for us. We can all talk about cold shock, but can you really talk about it until you've been cold shocked? Absolutely not. You've got no idea what that guy's going through. So I love getting a chainsaw out and digging a great big pit in the middle of the lake outside the sauna and throwing them in one after the other, you know. But it gives them something, as much as it being a spectacle and it's fantastic for the Instagram photos. It really gives them something. It gives them a link, that understanding. All right, you know, the first 20 seconds are going to be hell, but I could actually be here for quite a substantial amount of time. I just need to relax. I just, you know, all those things. Actually, when you take yourself out of water and you then become the expedition leader, that gives you such a huge plethora of skill sets and the ability to talk people through a problem. And if you haven't experienced them yourself, you just can't give people the help and assistance and the guidance they need whilst they're in that situation. A doctor flapping around and squatting mosquitoes off themselves, terrified of leeches, is not a good kind of mood filler to have next to the guy who's, you know, whose arse is hanging out and really needs some help. So taking people through the process, letting them do the expeditions as expedition clients, getting them the understanding, and then the next phase is then bringing in that kind of medical structure, letting them take on certain roles. By the end of it, by the end of you've done a couple of good courses, you know, they don't have to all be with us. Absolutely, there's thousands of companies that run expeditions. We just want to give you the basics. We want to give you those skill sets so you feel confident enough to progress your career. And that's it. That's really the best part of it, is we can take doctors and turn them into, in my eyes, in our industry, something super useful. Because a doctor is incredibly useful, but if they don't understand the environment, if they don't understand the hazards, it's like having a, you know, a fresh officer straight out of Sandhurst, and, you know, and all of a sudden they've got the map upside down, they've got no idea where they're going. You know, it's the same thing. The skill sets are there, they've been taught them, but actually putting that into real life practice does take practice. It takes time, and it's really great having the opportunity to share that and to share our passion with the wilderness, with people who want to make it their office. So yeah, it's been an incredible opportunity.
Yeah, it's quite a sort of unique take to it, really, isn't it? And it's one of those that, especially as a sort of, if you're not in the expedition world, you sort of look at it and go, or you watch, you know, the TV shows and stuff of expeditions, like, oh, this is the doctor. You're like, oh, okay, cool. But you don't really sort of appreciate that. Obviously, that sort of makes sense, that they need to be able to be comfortable in those environments and then apply their skill set to it. It's not just, oh, you're a doctor at home, sweet, now you can be a doctor here. It's, you can be a doctor at home, but then you need to learn how to be a doctor here. So it's pretty pretty interesting. So started in 2018, was that, did you leave the army straight away? Did you do other expedition stuff in between? How did you sort of transition to that?
So I got out in 2009. So I went straight into, I set up a company that was, back then it was called UK Hammocks. So we started making custom hammock gear, really. You know, I literally taught myself to sew, taught myself to sit on a sewing machine and make stuff. We'd found that there was a lot of equipment that was kind of lacking. You know, the military had good equipment, but as with everything, the boys like to buy their own kit. They want to look alley as fuck. You know, that's just the way it goes. And we found that jungle kits, hammocks, we were just lacking massively. We were really lacking in good quality equipment that worked. Started making up small products and just kind of selling them to friends, and picked up a couple of little contracts with different regiments and things, was able to feed them into the PRI shops. And it kind of took off. It took off over the websites. And then what we found is that we were using the jungle as a testing ground. We were flying out to Brunei, we were flying out to into kind of Penang, and we were flying down into Sarawak and going in the jungle and testing the products. And what we realized was that actually we just kind of sold the dream. You know, it's like buying a pair of running trainers and all of a sudden you want to be Usain Bolt. It's the same gig. You know, you buy a cool hammock with a cool set, all of a sudden you want to go to the jungle. So we started. I started knocking out jungle trips. We started doing Arctic trips in Sweden, in Kiruna, and here up in Kirkenes. We were running trips into Namibia. We were doing UK-based stuff. And it just worked really well. It was a really great system. I just kind of, by the time I got to my kind of early 30s, life really wasn't where it was supposed to be for me. I had two fantastic kids. My ex-wife is still serving, an incredible career soldier, but life just wasn't where I wanted it to be, and I was really fucking struggling. I just couldn't get my head out of my arse and really see that life was worth living. I just landed on my feet. I got a friend I've met in Sweden, gave me a call and asked if I'd come and give him a hand up here in Norway, and that was it. That was kind of the end of it. Met a hot blonde Norwegian chick, and you know, now we've got children and beautiful house, and we live in an amazing place. All has been fantastic, just supported what we do. I'm pretty used to being home now with the kids. If I disappear off and, you know, not calling it a holiday, that's really good. You know, and I'm sunning myself on a beach in Langkawi or So if it's been great, but that transition from UK Hammocks to moving to Norway and then just rekindling it with Josh, it was all in that transition period of closing up UK Hammocks. That was sold off in 2016, and I sold the business off. And I kind of sat on it for 6-8 months. And then I hooked up with Josh and we just thought, you know what? Why the fuck not? Like, why not? It's something we both love doing. And you gain nothing by not trying. So we did. We gave it a good couple of rounds down range, and we thought, you know what, this is really working. It's really the kind of, it was a missing link in the industry. There was other, and there still is, other companies that do similar things that we do. However, they lack the extremes. They lack the real extremeness of everything I've seen with most parts of this industry, most parts of travel tourism and adventure tourism. They're all obviously about the money. Everything's about the profit margin. Probably where we fucked up, really, because that's why we're not that rich. But we made it more about the experience. We made it more about taking you to somewhere that no one's ever been before. You know, the last humans that stepped foot in that spot were my group 2 years ago. It's not a well-traveled place. You know, you genuinely are in the wilderness. And we found that added such a deep element to a trip, to be able to actually put somebody there, and you get that feeling of being significant, you get that ego drop, you're leveled by nature. And for anyone who stood in the middle of a frozen Arctic lake and realized how small and insignificant you are, or stood in the middle of the trees and just looked up at an incredible triple layer canopy, a rainforest above your head, biodegradable little thing wandering around. Just couple that with some great instructors and some incredible medical training. You know, I think we just felt like we had the recipe for something that was missing, that kind of, that almost cult-like, you know, and that's what we've got now. We've got this incredible group, this following of fantastic young doctors who really, really love the fact that they're a part of it, that they, you know, they've been tagged all the time. It's just it's a very positive feeling to see that something you put together and you put it out to the world is being taken well by people. And that's super positive.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Like, it's I think there's always a disconnect, and it might be the whole military mindset thing. Obviously, different regiments, different branches of service and different goals. But it's sort of like once you leave, there is that big search for something else that you expected life to be.
I didn't have it. I couldn't get out of fucking bed, man. Like, I knew what I wanted to do, but there's the gap that the military leaves is fucking huge.
Yeah.
It's huge. And you don't realize it. And it's because it's not a job, it's a lifestyle. And you rip yourself out of one lifestyle and drop yourself in Civvy Street. And it's not like I was in the army for 50 years, but even that, coming into Civvy Street and being there, and I was kind of still in touch with it because of my ex, you know, she was very much in. I was still in the mess a couple of nights through the year, and, you know, you still had that kind of feeling, but it wasn't enough. It just wasn't enough. There was something really missing from life. And ultimately what I found it was just adventure, just that feeling of having a group of people together, that camaraderie of being out in nature and working as a team to basically overcome what's in front of you, and that was it. But it took a fucking long time to find it really did, and it wasn't a pleasant kind of transition between where I was then to where I am now. It took its time, it really does.
Yeah, I think it's what that thing is for everyone, I think varies, and I think it changes throughout years as well as you grow and change. It's awesome to hear like other people that have found it and they're progressing on. You know, mine, when I left the Marines and ended up in the fire service, I thought that would be the thing that bridges the gap. And it just wasn't. It just wasn't the same. You know, it's more of a job than it is a lifestyle. It still is a lifestyle. Meant to be. But for me, you know, working away in hostile environment instruction, creating GTC a brand for itself, and then all the avenues of GTC that have now built up around it, like this podcast, and other bits and bobs, that for me is ticking that box. I still get a little bit of adventure. I still get to go away, still get to challenge myself in different ways. And then I've also got like the GTC side of it, which is just, well, if I had any hair left, it would definitely fall out. So it adds that level of stress to it. And I think, yeah, I think it is a common attitude between people leaving the forces. As you say, you don't have to do 50 years, 30 years, 20 years. It could be, you know, the minimum length or the full duration. You know, I think there's always going to be that struggle to find that lifestyle, if you want to call it a brotherhood, sisterhood, you know, institutionalized, yeah, whatever you want to call it. There's always that search for that afterwards.
Absolutely. You know, I didn't leave the military by kind of, I'm going to say by choice, but that's a lie. I did choose to leave. But, you know, we had children, and I was away all the time. I'm an ex-recovery mechanic. And my life was going nowhere. You know, I was in a proper dead man's boots job. You know, you're waiting for people to retire after 22, 23 years before there was any chance that one of you was going to get selected. Whereas my missus was flying. She was doing great. So it made logical family economic sense that if anyone was going to jump ship, it was going to be me. And I was totally okay with that. I really was. And I think as soon as you kind of sign on that line and say, that's it, I'm in my last 12 months, your mindset does change. You do start to resent the military a little bit. You start to get a little bit pissy with it. You get a bit lazy. And I don't actually know whether that's a positive thing or not. You know, I don't think that transition it gave me into Civvy Street was a good one, because I kind of felt like, you know, I'm getting out now, working through. But I did all sorts, mate. I worked in fucking Sainsbury's stacking shelves on a night time. I worked in wine rack being a psychologist and a wine salesman. You know, I went through a lot of different kind of little roles to try and find my place in the world and try and find some form of stability. But that stress, you know, you mentioned stress, but I think stress is a key component that we need in life, because when I removed the stress of work, the stress of, you know, being out on ops, the stress of just being on exercise, the stress of having to go to the fucking gym at 6 o'clock on a Monday morning, you know, once they were taken from me, and then it was all me, it was all about my own motivation. I didn't have any. You know, without a PTI stood up my arse screaming and shouting, I was really struggling to get in the gym. I was struggling to motivate myself. I was struggling to just get up on a morning and make things happen. And I think there's a lot of people struggle with that. I think it's a big part of it. You know, and we are bred into this. But, I mean, I'm not so sure what it is, you know, with the Marines. But I know with the Army especially, there is a consensus put on keeping yourself fit and healthy. But in the same way, for your first 4 or 5 years, that consensus is purely on the staff. They do it for you. You know when your PT times are, you know when you're going on exercise, you know when you're doing this, you know when you're doing that, you know what time you get up and make your bed and eat your breakfast and tip up to parade in the morning. Once you rip that routine away and the stress of that routine, you kind of left with bugger all, to be fair. You know, there's not a lot left, and it takes a huge amount of soul searching to dig out that kind of aggression again and dig out that want and that drive to be a human and keep going. So that was it was a pretty gruesome process. And I think there's most people who come from any kind of, you know, military background could probably feel that. Maybe it gets worse the longer you go. You know, I do think about my ex-missus now. She's been 30 years in. The fuck's the world going to look like to her when she comes out? You know, how is that transition going to go? You know, I hope to God for her, you know, the pension's good enough and she can just chill out, because the time it took me to get there, you know, she'd be a pensioning age in Civvy Street, but, you know, by the time she sorts herself out and gets going. So it is good to see. I mean, I did turn down a lot of help, like most people do. I'm a typical bloke. But just get it going, you know. But it's not talked about that much either, to be fair. There's always, you know, there's a lot of people talk about transition to Civvy Street. I wanted to be a cop. You know, when you leave the military, for those who aren't in the military, you know, you go through these kind of career development days and you can go away and learn how to write a CV, and you can maybe pick certain jobs you want to do. And if you're lucky, there'll be training courses for those jobs. And I did that. I went to a police training academy, all sponsored by the military. I was doing fucking great. You know, everything I had was great. They helped me write my application. It was bomb proof. And I didn't get in because of quotas. You know, we were talking 2008, 2009, there was quarters in the police then, you know, and they weren't looking for that many guys like me. And I think that was a good thing, to be fair. I think that was a good thing. It was a good sign that actually you need to do this stuff on your own and keep going. But yeah, it could have been so different.
Yeah, that's it, mate. Like, it could have been so different, and we could have still been having this chat, but from a different perspective. You know, you could have been, you know, however many years in the police. It is a strange one, and I think, you know, it's that routine, it's that lifestyle, it's that discipline, it's however you want to put it, and then you take that away, and then you're sort of outside, and whether it's the right decision for you at the time or for whatever reason, you're still missing that structure, and you are literally just then the shell. Like, how do you fill that shell up? And for different people, it takes a different amount of time, and filling that shell up of the life, it takes different time, and as I say, is and different things, you know, that is joining the fire service, joining the police, you know, transferring into another thing, joining the ambulance service, something like that. For other people, it's creating something for themselves. For other people, it's just earning a decent amount of money on the circuit. You know, for everyone, it's different. But I think it's, yeah, as you say, there's people are talking about it a little bit more, but I think a lot of work needs to be done with transitioning people from the military world. And especially now, where the generations coming out of the forces aren't necessarily the ones that have gone to Iraq and Afghanistan and that sort of thing. Their biggest issue isn't mental health and mental illness in the traditional sense of trauma and PTSD type related stuff. It's more now the transitional structure of life. Now, obviously, a lot of people would say, you know, I'll just get on with it, mate. Like, you get out, you get a job, and you live your life. And yeah, there is a certain amount of stoicism needed when it comes to life. As you say, stress is important. It pushes you and drives you to achieve things. But I think it's interesting and good to keep in the forefront of people's minds that, you know, if people are dealing sort of mentally, if you like, or struggling at the time, it's not necessarily because, oh, they're depressed, they've got anxiety, they've got PTSD, whatever. It could just be that they're just trying to find something and it takes a bit of time. Yeah. The more we can normalize the fact that you don't have to put a name on it to be depressed, you don't have to be anxious, you don't have to be diagnosed, you can just be having a shit time. Chat about if that's how you deal with it, do something else to deal with it.
I totally agree. And if you look back, you know, it's a sadly long time ago since I got out, you know, when I look back and see the numbers now, I think, fuck, you know, it'd been out an awful long time. But the culture around that time, kind of 2008, 9, 10, it was kind of okay to come out and be a military character. People were looking for ex-soldiers because they came with a little bit of grunt behind them. They kind of had a little bit of order to themselves and things were there. But what I've found now is that society is not the same way. Society isn't the same. You know, the society I came out into is very different to the one people are coming out today in 2023. So that, and what hasn't changed, of course, is the military, because, you know, we have to keep that the same. You know, the ultimate goal there is the protection of our land. And that does mean, for those unlucky few, that you're going to have to put boots on the ground and you're going to have to put in the fucking dirt time and do some bad shit to bad people. You come out of that now in 2023 into what the world looks like today. That's a hell of a transition. That's a hell of a transition on its own. Just to come from that, no bullshit, we don't take shit kind of lifestyle in the military. You've got your brotherhood. You can laugh about anything. And the next day, you know, welcome to 2023. It's not like that anymore. I've never felt so old in my life. I genuinely do not understand most of the world around me. I have to have my kids double check things if I'm going to say something. There's often my kids will pick me up when I'll say something in public, and it's just a real kind of, it's my era. It's the way I was. It's the way I was brought up. I'm not going to change for anybody. I'd certainly never mean to offend anyone. But in this day and age, that's very easy to do. And, you know, that must be a really, really hard transition now to walk out of, you know, like the bootlegs, walk out the Marines today, you know, you guys, you've got a tough little brotherhood that's put together, that's built on trust, it's built on that integrity, built on that kind of teamwork. And in that comes the banter. Without the banter, you don't fucking get through it. You don't get through that shit without laughing about it. But that doesn't work. It does work in the ambulance service. It definitely will probably work in the fire brigade, those kind of things. But you put people into just a general job now, that mindset is completely unacceptable. But when I got out, it was a mindset people actually looked for. They looked for it because you were a good leader. You were going to be a good manager. You were going to be a good, you know, floor manager or a store manager because you had some regiments about you. People were going to do as you said. You can't be that guy anymore.
No, and I think...
Because it must be fucking hard.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think you're right. Like, it is more difficult. And there's certain aspects of it I do agree with. You know, people shouldn't be excluded or feel excluded based on anything, really, other than ability. That, in my mind, that is it. If you are able to do the job to the required standard, anything else around that doesn't matter. Obviously, that comes down to some restrictions, you know, because if you are too short, you might not be able to reach something you need to reach on a piece of equipment or something like that. If you're not able-bodied in some way, you know, you're missing a leg, you're in a wheelchair, you've got color blindness, you know, whatever it is on that scale, you know, you may not be able to fulfill a role because you're unable to do that. Sometimes that just is facts, but that is an unfair part of life, and that's something that will never change. You know, you can't expect a police officer to, you know, jump out of a car, jump into his wheelchair and roll after a criminal. It's just not feasible. However, are there roles within the police for people in wheelchairs? 100%. Of course there is. Just not that particular role in that force. So the point I'm trying to make is like, inclusivity is wonderful, it's good, but not every single role in every single industry is open to every ability. It should, however, be open to everyone's preferences. If they want to be whatever they want to be, if they want to socialize wherever they want to socialize, that should be fine. And even if they want to be referred to as something, that should be fine. But it shouldn't be a prejudice on the people that don't want to be like that or don't understand it or forget to refer to you as the right thing. So yeah, it is a minefield. And even things like the fire service and the AMBO service at the moment, and especially the police, like the police can't do anything right. You know, they're just pulled for the coals for everything, and they always have been, but right now it's horrendous. But like, you can't have that banter in anywhere anymore, you know, you just can't.
I had a conversation with my brother, my stepbrother. He's a math teacher. We were talking a lot about this. Obviously he has lots of students, and the school time today is very different from the school time now. We talked about this. We talked about how society's changed massively and how I don't understand any of it. And his father was there, who's my stepfather. So he was kind of the total end of the spectrum on the other side. You know, he couldn't understand anything. He couldn't understand why people got offended. And the way he described it was a really nice way. And it was talking about this pendulum, you know, and right now this pendulum has swung completely to the other side. We're almost a little bit over the top. We're a little bit over the top with the sensitivity. We're a little bit over the top with all of it. And he genuinely believes that pendulum is going to kind of come back. But what it's given us is, you know, I saw in the news today about Australia and people writing and protesting about, you know, getting rid of this kind of history of, you know, celebrating England coming in and taking over the First Nations people and all this kind of stuff. And I think it's fantastic, because what we should be doing is fucking rewriting history. History was written by people who were listened to, people of power. It doesn't necessarily mean it was the right history to write. We've had the same thing. We've had the same culture. You know, when I was in the army, it was illegal to be gay. You couldn't be gay in the army back then. If you were, you'd have been kicked out. Now, it's perfectly fine. And that's a great place to be, because why the fuck shouldn't you be allowed to do a job if you're good at it? Who cares what your sexual preference is or what clothes you like to wear on a weekend? It doesn't make any difference. But the stigma was there. And what we've done now is we've completely washed that stigma, and this pendulum sitting right over here, and everything's super sensitive. But I do genuinely believe that that will kind of settle a little bit in the middle. And what we'll have learned from this pendulum swing is actually to fucking respect people for who they are, to respect people for their values and what they stand for, and equally accept that just because they are something that you aren't does not mean that they aren't a valid member of society. You know, because we're starting to see now that there's all, you know, these people have been hiding in the fucking closet because they were terrified to come out, terrified to destroy their careers or destroy their reputations. Actually, now everything's great. And that's the way it should be. People should be allowed to do what they want to do and enjoy life the way they want to do, as long as they are, you know, functioning and kind of positive members of society. I don't think it makes the slightest bit of difference. So it would be nice to test our police, you know, because let's face it, everyone's got a job to do and everyone fucks up. You know, we all fuck up. And I think there should be a level of tolerance. There's a level of, because it's never going to get any better. It's going to build divides in society. And if anything, this last kind of 2-3 years has taught us is that we don't need divides in culture and society. We need togetherness. We need people to be functioning as one unit. So that's good to see. And I hope, you know, as we progress forward, and you know, I'm a father of 4 flipping kids now, you know, I hope their future holds, you know, a lot more in the sense of openness and accessibility to things that didn't exist when I grew up. And we're seeing that. I think we're genuinely seeing that. I think, you know, we as kind of this kind of slightly older generation sit and look at this and we're still trying to figure it out. But, you know, my kids are growing up in it. They don't know anything different. They don't know anything different. That's the life they grew up in. And that is the pendulum swing. It's just a generation thing. When we're all dead, all the kind of bigotism and crap will have been left behind because the people who were left are the people who grew up in this new, better functioning version of how it should be. And that tolerance will settle. The kind of, you know, the animosity around it will settle. And I think it'll be a very positive move for society in general.
Yeah, I think you're right, mate. And it's about finding that balance, isn't it? It's about letting the pendulum swing. I like that metaphor. And, you know, and then it will eventually hit back to the middle. You know, it's again comes down to like the old proverb of, you know, hard times create hard men, soft times create soft men. And it's sort of like, is that same sort of thing of like, if times are easy, people can express themselves and look into things and open things up. If times are hard, they knuckle down and get the job done. I think what it's taught us is that even when you can open up, express yourself, be whoever you want to be, you can still get the job done. So I think it's good. Yeah, mate. Okay, cool. Well, let's get away from the deep stuff. It's a bit early for me over here to get this deep. My heart rate's going a bit. let's soften it back up again. So obviously you've been all over the world. You've worked all over the world. And especially when it comes to unique expeditions, what is your sort of favorite place, environment, habitat to take people to launch expeds, to enjoy?
To take people to would be the jungle. I think that there's a great book, and it's called The Jungle is Neutral, and it's written by Frederick Spencer Chapman. If you haven't read the book, I advise everyone to read it. Incredible British Army officer in the midst of the Malaya War, on his own, crippled with malaria and everything that went with it, teaching guerrilla warfare to the locals. You know, and the term "the jungle is neutral" is so poignant. It will give you everything you require, everything you need to survive, everything you need to eat, water. It's all there. But in equal folds, it will give you every single means to kill yourself. And that understanding of the trees and that understanding of the jungle is something people don't have. They just don't have it. And that's why, you know, the jungle is, you know, one of the last stages in special forces training. It is. It's a maker of men. And being in the jungle really does level you. That feeling of never seeing the sun, never seeing the sky, you know, or you're just enclosed. You're enclosed into this kind of little biodome. And that biodome shrinks even smaller when you get in your hammock on a night time, and it's just you in this, you know, 8-foot-long piece of material with a net over your head. You can hear the incessant whizzing of mosquitoes outside the net. But in that little cocoon of happiness and tranquility is you. And I think to take people to the jungle is it's a very, very special moment. You know, that moment when you bring them inside the canopy, it's an all-encompassing sound. It's an incredible kind of orchestra of nature itself. It's a beautiful, beautiful place to be. So I think to take people to, it would definitely have to be the jungle. It's brutal. It really is brutal. You know, it's been described to me by a friend, Stuart, as the kind of a mood magnifier. And if you're in good spirits, the jungle is magnificent. It's rich with color. It's rich with sound and smells. Everything is just jaw-dropping beauty. However, once that morale starts to dip, that's it, man. You're looking at your fucking boots. The rain is so annoying on your head. The mosquitoes are driving you nuts. Everything you touch is sharp and pointy or wants to kill you. You know, and that's the great thing about the jungle. Personally, it's the Arctic. I mean, I live at 69 degrees north. I live 2.7 kilometers from the Russian border. You know, it's cold, about 18 minus, I think, today. The sun came back 2 days ago. This place is just true wilderness. It's as true a wilderness as you can get. To walk out of your back door and know full well that if you were to walk for 1 hour, there is a huge potential you could not make it home if you aren't prepared, if you don't know what you're doing, if you haven't got the right equipment with you. You know, even going to the supermarket in the middle of winter is an expedition. You know, and that isn't a joke. You might get stuck at, I mean, I live over the other side of a mountain from town. It's not far. It's about 6 minutes. But there has been times when I've had to stop the car and walk home or ski home because you just aren't getting home. And I love that. And the good thing about the Arctic is it's sterile. You know, it's not the jungle. The jungle kills you slowly. The Arctic kills you quick. And that's the kind of the way I like it here. You know, if you fuck up here, it's over pretty quick and it's quite clean. It'll be miserable, but it'll be over fast. If you screw up in the jungle, you know, one tiny cut, you could be dragged out for 4 weeks of misery before you finally drop. You know, it would be disgusting. There'd just be infection after infection. And you don't get that so much here. You know, it's just a frozen landscape of beauty. Magical in the summer, 24 hours of sunshine, endless fishing, hunting. It's a beautiful place to be. So yeah, personally, definitely the Arctic. But I think for taking people to, you just can't beat that grandeur and the kind of majesty of the jungle. It's an incredible location to go to.
Yeah, I think it's they're both obviously incredible environments, and I think the uniqueness of both is their binding factor, which makes them both the same, if that makes sense. The fact that they're both,
it does, absolutely,
essentially polar opposites. Obviously, you have alpine forests, you have a lot of woodland in the Arctic area, but you know, as you were saying earlier, if you're right out in the middle of a frozen lake, if you're right up into the tundra, you know, there's barely any trees really, or right into the Arctic Circle, there's nothing.
We see the difference here because we have Russia literally there, and that is the last of the kind of Russian tundra that comes across. And there's an area about 15 kilometers south of me, which is called Pasvik, the Pasvik Valley. And a little geography lesson for those who don't know. So right at the end of Norway, on the Russian border, is this piece of Norway, and it's called Sørvaranger, and it's like a small upside down triangle that goes down. On the left side of that triangle, you've got Finland. On the right side, you've got Russia. And to the north, we've just got the ocean. And then it's a direct line between here and the North Pole. And there's a small little kind of sneak around in the top left corner that keeps you in Norway, and that's kind of Alta, Tromsø, and then you're heading down. So this kind of tundra comes in from Russia, and then you have the Tigre, the birch forest, that comes in from Finland on the other side, and we're kind of in the mix here. So Pasvik has got the Russian tundra, and where I live is definitely Tigre. And where my cabin is, the Tigre. So that is, you're right. It's tiny, small little birch trees that are all twisted and gnarly as fuck. You know, the crazy looking trees. And then nothing. Absolutely nothing. You know, in the summertime, there's lots of berries, mushrooms and things. But in the winter, it's desolate. It's a desolate place. And that's a real kind of, it's a real clinch to you. When you stand out there and look at it, it's beautiful. But once that reality sets in, that this is going to be home now, and this is where I'm going to be, in my tent or in my snow hole or in the cabin, it really does change the kind of mentality of it. I mean, it's incredible. It's a beautiful place. I mean, driving snowmobiles is the most fun you'll ever have in your life. It's like driving a motorbike, knowing full well that if you fall off, it doesn't hurt that much. You know, it's that kind of gig.
I wouldn't guarantee that. Didn't Kenny Block just die on a snowmobile accident?
Yeah, but I'm fucking out, man. You're doing backflips and stuff. I mean, there's a bit of a difference. Yeah.
There's a limit.
Yeah, there's a limit. Yeah, I'm definitely not that good. I have there's an ongoing joke around here with this crazy Englishman driving snowmobiles. Everyone's terrified for my safety. But there's nothing beats it. I mean, this morning I was out skiing with my I've got a 10-month-old baby. So we've been out skiing around the back of the house here up onto the mountains. You just don't get that. You don't get that wilderness. Where I come from, you know, I'm from North Yorkshire. There's wilderness there, but you can always see a telegraph pole, or you know, you walk a good 2 hours in one direction, you're going to reach civilization of some sort. You just don't get that feeling here. You don't get that feeling of, oh, it's all right, town's only over there. Because you know that what's between you and town is an adventure that is, you know, worth writing a book about. And I guess that's the difference. And the jungle's fucking nuts. You know, the jungle is nuts. You can walk off the side of a motorway. I used to run a lot of trips in Brunei. We used to have a training base not far outside of the capital, Bandar Seri Begawan. And we literally just stop on the side of the road, walk through 600 metres of tree, and that was you. You may as well be 2,000 miles inside the interior jungle, because you can't hear anything, you can't see anything, you're just surrounded by this kind of beast. And that's it, you know. And there's lots of kind of cool ways to describe the jungle. This impenetrable wall of green, and you know, and it really is. Once you're in it, it's really nuts. And that jungle changes. You go to coastal jungle. So we do Langkawi. That's one of my favorite places in the world. Tax free. It's like Thailand without the ladyboys, and you know, there's no prostitution. It's a really cool place to take, you know, clients are clients. I've been doing this job a long time, and Langkawi is the safest place to take people to get them into good quality jungle, have an amazing time, and still be able to go out in town afterwards and have a really good meal. And you know, it's just an incredible place. But that coastal jungle is rugged. It's rugged, man. It's these big black volcanic rock that just kind of comes out of the ocean, and on top of it is a rainforest. And it's such an incredible way, these little tiny little islands that are so diverse. We have an island we use in Langkawi. You know, and there must be, I mean, I've personally seen pigs on there. We've seen clouded leopards, endless amounts of monkeys. You know, we got raided by monkeys this last year, just gone. There was guys coming back and found monkeys were shotgunning cans of beer and eating sleeping pills, stealing head torches. You know, you just don't get that. You don't get that kind of close to nature where you've been out for a bit of a tab up in the hills and you come down and find out, you know, you've literally been ransacked by macaques. It's a super cool place to be.
It's always monkeys, isn't it? It's always monkeys. Like, I've been, like, we were obviously on the rock run in Gibraltar. Whenever you go to Gibraltar, you stop off there. Everyone runs up to the top, back down. There's loads of monkeys that live around there and on the rock. And they always try and steal your food, grab your drinks or whatever you're having. So that's hilarious. But I was working in South Africa, and it was like you had to lock the kitchen door in your camp, sort of kitchen area. Otherwise, by the time you come back from a patrol, like, there'll be monkeys in there. And it was one of those things you play lip service to and you go, yeah, all right, yeah, cheers. But like, we probably came back twice, and there was monkeys all over the camp trying to get in the kitchen. One day, one of the lads didn't close it properly. Whoever was last in there, obviously definitely wasn't me because I'm not a shit camp, but whoever it was. And like, there was just monkeys going mental, and they were like throwing like bratwursts everywhere. Like, it was just brilliant.
You know, I think one of the funniest stories I've had, we were in Langkawi. It was just before COVID. It was the last trip we ran before COVID. And we'd been out. One of the clients was staying at this super nice hotel on the other side of the island, and he invited us all up for dinner. So we went there. We're all sitting down. We're having an amazing time. Then my phone rings at 3 o'clock in the morning. Now, he'd been hanging one on with the boys. He'd gone back to his room. he'd left the balcony doors open because they were all sitting drinking on the veranda. He literally, there was a fucking monkey running around with his parang in his hand. And he's sitting in his bed, surrounded by monkeys, with all of his fucking sharps out, food everywhere, eating foot powder balls. I just, you know, you can't get that. That doesn't happen anywhere else. It's only with monkeys. It's literally just monkeys that would come in and just trash the hotel room, you know, and start holding your ransom with your own machete. I think it's, you can't beat that.
Amazing. He was mugged by a monkey, essentially, in his own hotel room with his own prey. Like, yeah. as you say...
Through his own stupidity. It was brilliant. Couldn't have been any better.
Without nature, you wouldn't have those stories and you wouldn't have that adventure and you wouldn't have that sort of that excitement. You know, they're stories and things that just never happen. You know, they don't happen to people unless you live in those environments, work in those environments every day. Awesome, mate. So we are ticking on. I'm conscious of your time and my time and the attention spans of the three listeners that do listen to this. So I have got a question for you. It's one of those questions that, you know, when you're sitting around, you're at the ranges, you're bored shitless, you know, the instructors and the RCOs are always like, oh, dry drills, when you're not on the point, dry drills, lads. Well, your Fred was your dry drills, it's pissing down with rain. All you want to do is have a hot wet and talk about absolute bollocks. So once you've gone down the list of who you're going to fight, who you'd beat in a fight, and who you're going to fuck, once you've gone through them, you're going to go on to this question. And this is a good one for mine. So you're in a survival situation, if you like. Don't know how long you're going to be before you're rescued. The environment is kind of like jungle-ish desert island, so you've got a little bit of sand, salt water, jungly sort of imagine a sort of tropical desert island trapped on it. So you can take three items. What three items? Now there's each one has to fall into a category. Item one, you can only use it once. Once you've used it that once, it's gone, never to be used again. The second one lasts forever. You'll have it till the end of time. Third one has to be edible. Now, if you say a bag of rice, once that bag of rice is gone, it's gone. If you say a banana, banana is gone. So if you say, I will take, you know, 17,000 gallons of fresh drinking water, you're not playing the game. All right? You get what I mean?
I get what you mean. You're not making it fucking easy. All right. Okay. So something I can take, I can only use once.
Yep. Something you can take, you can only use it once.
All right, I'm going to go for an InReach. Garmin InReach.
It is a classic
always
choice.
Always on me.
Yeah.
Send out one people. Hit.
Yeah.
This is what I am. Throw it in the ocean, good to go.
Yeah, some a lot of people have said that.
Will be a parang.
Yeah.
You know, good machete. I mean, this is a fucking, I'm talking work here. I mean, I'm pretty sure if I was on my own, I probably wouldn't be doing much more fun stuff than trying to survive. But so I'm going to go with the parang that I can keep. But the thing I can eat, Jack, I'm going to take my apprentice, Jack, and I release him by the end. But he can serve his purpose for as long as I can hold him for, and then I'll eat him.
Amazing. I mean, I've never had cannibalism as an answer, but, you know, in theory,
he does, man.
He is edible.
I'm shit fishing for a fucking jungle expert or whatever you want to call it. I can't fish for shit. I got two fish this year on the spear. And honestly, I mean, if I had speared him, I think he'd have just cut me up because he just swam straight towards me on both occasions and it was an easy hit. That was it. I genuinely can't fish. I can't ice fish. So that's what I'm going with. But seeing as we're on this term, I've got one for you because this is a great one to finish on. You've got a time machine. Okay, you go forwards or backwards, but you aren't coming back. It's a one-way ticket. Where would you go, and what one thing would you take with you?
That is a good one.
I can share mine to give you a little bit of inspiration.
Yeah, go on. Go on, hit me with yours.
I'd love to stand in a Viking shield wall. Don't ask me why, because I'd probably shit myself. But I genuinely would love to kind of experience that type of warfare, that kind of pure bones of just aggression and steel on steel. And it'd be a good set of like fucking Mark 7 body armor that I'd be taking with me. I'm not going to go all fancy and drop a jimpy in and, you know, and just, I think that feeling, regardless of what I would take with me, that moment, you know, I grew up in York. There's a huge Viking culture in York. I live in fucking Norway. You know, I have a huge interest in the kind of the early days of travel, that exploration of these guys on these stupid little wooden boats sailing around and just raping and massacring everyone. You know, I just think that was an insane part of history. And that, just to get a stand in that shield wall would have been pretty epic. But I asked this question a lot. It's my favorite kind of round the camp book. I've had some epic answers from people. Absolutely incredible. So don't let me down.
Yeah, build it up, why don't you? So, I think it would be a similar sort of vein to you. I think obviously the cheesy present person in me would say, no, I wouldn't need to travel. I'm enjoying my life. In sense of the game, I definitely think it would either be early foundation of like finding Canada. So when it was the newfound land, you know, when the settlers just started going over, and there was those early settlers that were like working with the local tribes, learning the language, hunting beaver, figuring out what they can eat, can't eat, where they can grow. Either that or across the Wild West, you know, just that whole frontierman, frontier, gold rush. You know, it's like there's nothing ahead of you. All that's ahead of you wants to kill you. All that's behind you doesn't believe that you'll make it. It's the whole two sides of that personal challenge. And then, I mean, other than massacring whole native populations, which probably isn't ideal, you know, just the whole challenging yourself and building your own ranch and being like, no, this stake in a claim. I think that would be sort of where I would sort of go, either sort of.
That is a good one. I like that.
In terms of what I'd take, I think that's difficult. I think, you know, realistically, you would say to yourself, right, I'm going to take a modern type of weapon because then you would do all of that stuff a lot quicker.
Fucking good metal detector that worked well, wouldn't it?
Metal detector, yeah, yeah. A language book, how to speak Comanche or something. But I think I'd have to choose sort of some sort of bolt action rifle, because you can self load and build your own ammunition, and that sort of time era they were starting to make ammunition, so you could have got it adapted to your bolt action rifle, but you'd still be well ahead of the curve. I think that would be some sort of decent, you know, 6.5 Creedmoor bolt action rifle. It's hardly ever going to fail. It's got one working part, really. If it goes wrong, you're in an era where people could figure out how to fix it. But you would be top of the pecking order. You know, you'd be the boat bringing all the beaver pelts back. You'd be the guy, you know, killing the most Indians. I think it's like it's a similar sort of idea. If it's going to work out, but it's that excitement, that sort of push.
Put yourself in a really difficult position. I think that's the key, isn't it? You know, you touched on nature before. Nature is it, isn't it? Nature, for me especially, is a huge part of everything I do. And I notice when I remove nature from my life a little bit, if I'm too much in the office or, you know, I'm too much. And I, in the meantime of running Unique Expedition, I work as a carpenter here, building cabins out in the wilderness and stuff. And I certainly had to do that through COVID. But it was brilliant. You know, I was still out in nature. I was still doing cool things in nature with good lads and having a really good laugh. And I think you know what you said before about those memories you make, those experiences we have in nature. I honestly can't remember many good nights out with the boys in town that left me with lasting memories, apart from a couple of sexually transmitted diseases. You know, the being in nature is a bit different, isn't it? You know, being in nature, the kind of stories are they're pretty wild. The stuff that happens when the boys are out and you're all out in nature and you're there with your group or you're there with your expedition, the tales of that expedition, they'll live forever.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think that's magic.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I always credit to it to like Foxy, Jason Fox, because that's who I've sort of heard it. But it's a similar sort of thought process that hundreds of people and philosophers and people that have worked in non-permissive environments have sort of spoke about. And it's the two types of fun, isn't it? It's the type one, type two fun. Type one is you enjoy it at the time, but you don't really remember it for the rest of your life. Like going out on the piss with the lads, you know, something like that. It's easy, it's fun at the time, and you enjoy it. Type two fun is most of the time at that time, you're probably pretty miserable or you're uncomfortable in some way. But they're the things that you remember and then you go back to and you go, oh, that was shit, wasn't it? That was horrible. What a great time that was. Yeah. You know, that and that is a life in nature, really, isn't it? You know, it is hard. It's a lot of work, even just planning for expeditions or raising money for the right kits. You don't die. It's all hard work. But it's memories and life afterwards that, as you say, makes it worth it, doesn't it?
Certainly does. It certainly does. And that's it.
Yeah, I can't think of a better way to sort of round it out then, really, mate. We've ranted for an hour about how amazing we are and how much everyone should get outdoors. So final closing statements then, mate. What have you got lined up with Unique Expeditions for 2023? What things have you got that your courses you're trying to fill or just things you want to chat about? What's on the horizon?
So we have got we've got Norway coming up 25th of March to the 1st of April, which is here, home with me, up at the cabin. Really worth looking at if you're interested in the Arctic, especially. It doesn't have to be medics, you know, we don't just do medics. All of our trips are 50-50, so we have one group of med students and medics and paramedics, and we have another group who are there for the expedition skills and the wilderness skills. So we always split them up, and you know, while guys are doing med simulations, the rest of us are out driving snowmobiles or snowshoeing and digging snow holes and things. So that's an epic trip. We have at the same time, or around the same dates, April time, we've got the Wales Wilderness Medicine course on, which is a weekend. They're super popular, really, really popular trips for people just to get that first taste of basically what wilderness medicine is and those expedition skills, learning how to use blades and axes, how to light fires, treat water, all that kind of good stuff that we all need to know when we start. We have Langkawi coming up. We've got Brunei, which is the Borneo expedition. Cotopaxi, big. I hate mountains. You'll never see me running these trips. That's Josh's bag. It's not that I'm scared of heights. I just really would rather someone sent me a picture from the top than making me suffer all the way up. Cotopaxi is incredible. I mean, I must admit, I read the blurb on our own website and I did nearly sign up myself. Like, it sounded epic. I just realized how much I hate altitude. And then we're back into jungle season again. The end of the year, you know, we're back out in Borneo and Langkawi. We have Namibia in the mix as well. It's around October time. So we've got a big, big season ahead of us. We've just finished two long weekends in Cairngorms. The guys have been incredible. We had 60-plus students come through over the two weekends. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a good year. It's going to be a great year. It's going to be the year where we're certainly going to put a lot more of our own personal time into being there every day. In the past, it's been something we've literally had to do, a normal job on the side. You know, through COVID, it sucked because we had to work. But I'm really looking forward to UE coming back into its own again now in 2023. And we've got an incredible crew. We've got some amazing staff on board. The interns are insane. You know, they're just digging out this work. We've got some incredible doctors who are helping out. And so it's going to be an amazing year. So if there is anyone who is interested in getting out in the outdoors, wants to just give themselves the skills to feel like they can go there and do it themselves, and I think that's maybe one thing that holds a lot of people back from being in nature. It's a pretty ominous thing to disappear out there in the woods for 4 or 5 days. especially if you haven't been in the military, if you've not done those kind of things, or maybe it's been a long time since you have, and removing that regimentation of the military away, and now you're on your own, and you look a bit weird going around in your fucking combat 95s and your Bergen on your back, you know, it's a good time to get yourself on something and get out. You know, doesn't have to be anything to do with us, but just get out and do something. I think that's the, that can be my closing statement. It's there, it's free. Everyone's worried about money at the minute, but nature's there. It doesn't cost you anything. And we've all got one. Doesn't matter whether you're living in London or you're living up here in Norway, you're over in New Zealand. It doesn't make any difference. There's nature outside your door. And I really, really urge people to just take some time, get out there, spend a night on the canvas, and remember that being in town is far, far scarier than being out in nature. You are still the top of the food chain. In most countries, you are still the top of the food chain when you're outside. You may not be walking around your local nightlife. You know, just use it. It's there. It will do so much for your mental health, so much for your ability to just see life for what it is. I think nature's where it's at. But absolutely booking a course and come out and freeze your ass off up here with me, swimming through the ice, and you can take a beer in the sauna.
Yeah, I'll see you in Brunei before I see you in Norway, mate. I can tell you that. Bit too chilly for my Raynoids or whatever it's called. Awesome, mate. Thank you very much. Well, anyone that wants to hear a little bit more from Matt or Unique Expeditions, they are Unique Expeditions on Instagram. And he did also mention a few other Instagrams throughout the day that you can jump on to see them. And the website is Unique Expeditions as well. I can't remember if it's .com or .co.uk, but if you Google it, it is the first one that comes up.
Yeah.
Perfect. Well, thanks very much for your time, mate. Thank you for coming on. Hope everyone enjoyed, and we'll have to get you back on tail end of this year, if not early next year, to just see how it all went, see where we're at with Unique Expeditions and see if you're still living in Norway, if you haven't froze on your way back from shopping or anything.
Well, I will, mate. I absolutely will. I can't see me ever leaving here, but you never know. If I do, it'll definitely be the jungle next, I think. That'll be it.
Perfect.
That'll be it.
Cheers for coming on, Matt. Appreciate your time. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
My absolute pleasure, mate. Take care, buddy.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the GTC podcast. Remember, do something that makes you just a little bit better every single day. Don't forget to head over to our Instagram @GTC podcast. Thanks again. Stay wavy.